I'm Jack.
I'm Patty.
I'm Casey.
And we are
Cunts in Space!
Queer Feminist Podcast. G'day, this is Cunts in Space, episode 2. This is Casey, and today we've got more Rad Femme Avenging coming at ya. We'll be talking to Kelly Cogswell of the Lesbian Avengers, and she's going to be telling us about how rad that group was and giving plenty of tips and tricks for anyone out there who's interested in kicking off with their own activist group along feminist queer lines. Enjoy! G'day, Kelly Cogswell. Welcome to Cunts in Space. Thanks for coming and joining our little podcast.
I've always wanted to go to space.
Now you are. Kelly, you are a founder of the Lesbian Avengers.
Yeah, like a founding member. I wasn't...
Founding member.
Yeah, I wasn't one of the thinker-uppers, but I was there from the first meeting.
One of the doers.
Yeah, I was there from the first meeting.
Yeah. And we're actually in New York City at the moment, and did it kick off here?
Yeah, it started in New York City in 1992.
In 92?
Yeah.
Wow. So 2 decades ago.
Exactly. Almost 2 decades ago. 20 years ago this week or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, six dykes went to the Pride March and handed out flyers to dykes that they saw along the sidelines and started recruiting.
Excellent. I love that. I saw on your website, We Recruit, and I think that's so gorgeous because there's all of that paranoia about lesbians recruiting and turning women.
Yeah, that's kind of part of how the Lesbian Avengers functioned, was kind of playing with the stereotypes, and instead of running away from them as fast as they could, they embraced them. So instead of saying, oh, no, we don't recruit, they said, sure, we recruit. In fact, the very first action that the Lesbian Avengers did was in the fall of 1992. At that time, there was like a big battle in New York over something called the Rainbow Curriculum that was supposed to teach little kids in grade school that there were lots of different kinds of people and you should respect them.
Yeah.
Most of the focus was on questions of ethnicity because there had been a lot of violence in the city. You know, black kids getting beaten up or killed even. There had been a couple of horrible episodes. The curriculum was something like 450 pages, and almost every page was about ethnicity. There was a little bit about women, and there were like 6 pages that mentioned lesbian and gay people. And because those 6 pages mentioned queers, the Rainbow Curriculum was horribly, horribly attacked by the right wing. And you have to remember that this was 1992 in the U.S., which was a big moment of the culture wars, when the Christian right was attacking LGBT people, especially queer artists, and trying to also create splits between people of color that they like to call the true minorities and LGBT people.
Oh, really?
So it kind of filtered into New York via the Rainbow Curriculum. So the very first action the Lesbian Avengers did was to go to a grade school where the opponents of the Rainbow Curriculum kind of was a hotbed of Christian fundamentalism and hand out balloons saying, ask about lesbian lives. So, I mean, imagine lesbians going and handing out balloons to children. It freaked out the straight people, but it also freaked out the lesbian and gay community that were horrified that we were confronting the taboo of children. Because that's the other stereotype, right? That we're all child molesters.
Yeah.
So the one point was teach about lesbian lives, and the other point was a lot of us wore T-shirts that said, I was a lesbian child. You have to keep in mind that it's not just erasing adult lesbian and gay people. I mean, in those days, that was what the dialogue was about, but also transgendered people and other kinds of queers. It's also about acknowledging the fact there are queer children in schools now. Yeah. And it's not like they're in an atmosphere that's like safe and protective. Because we all pretend like, oh my God, we can't go into the schools and fight for queer rights. Like, they're safe and protected places, when the reality is they're already battlegrounds. Yep. Kids are horrible to each other. Some of the teachers are horrible to the kids.
Yep. So you had provoked, I'm sure, some horror from what you're saying from going into schools. Did you have positive reactions as well?
Oh, yeah, we absolutely did. And also some of the people in the gay community that had been scared of the action when they saw what it actually was.
Yeah.
Thought that was a good idea, actually. Because what we did is we had a great big marching band.
Yeah.
Where our marching band dressed up in Catholic schoolgirls' uniforms, like the little plaid skirts and the white blouses.
This is like compulsory attire for everyone in Australia, pretty much.
And, you know, with big bass drums and snares, and we sang, and we hand out balloons.
Yeah.
And some of the parents were actually totally cool with it. Like, we would hand out flyers, and they're like, yes, this is actually a good idea to teach about lesbian lives. And others of them were like, oh my god, give back that balloon. It's like, you'll get cooties from the balloon.
Oh, that's terrible. They would have been traumatized because they had to give their balloon back.
Oh, good. Exactly. So it was kind of interesting. For me, that was really early in my life as an out lesbian. Like, I hadn't quite finished dealing with that whole thing.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to kind of think about what it meant to be a lesbian.
Yeah.
That's my girlfriend, Anna.
Hello. I'm Casey. G'day.
Wash my hands.
Okay. So it was actually interesting, the first action of the Lesbian Avengers. Like, there was a certain element of anger to it, like, how dare you shut us out of the curriculum. But also, we were aware that the whole lesbian and gay thing was also only being used as an excuse by the racists that wanted to dump the whole curriculum. Because they weren't thrilled about teaching about diversity in general.
Yeah, right.
But we were the easy targets. So we kind of pulled some of that together too. But it was interesting because it was a little passive aggressive, but it was also funny and it was a moment of celebration.
Yeah.
And also realizing that we could have a good time while we were provoking. You don't go out there and
be angry and on the attack. That seems like the common element in all subversive actions that I'm attracted to, and LaBarb and things that kind of pull the rug out from under the powers that be by taking a positive approach, giving balloons something.
Also because it's not
hard to know.
What you want to do is change culture. I mean, you want to change politics, you want to change laws, but to change culture, I think you have to get into people's heads in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
And part of that is to point at something and say, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if that's ridiculous, then suddenly it's possible you can change it.
Yeah. And no one's mind is ever changed by, you know, having their head beaten in.
Just getting screamed at.
cajoled or enticed or having a dialogue with people is what brings them around.
Yeah. But also, we organized our action to be very visual. So the message was like, you know, you could hand your flyer, but the message was also just by looking at the crowd or just by looking at a balloon or whatever.
Right.
Like, look, these are lesbians. Most of these people had never seen whole groups of lesbians before. Maybe they had never seen a lesbian at all that was out.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're like, oh, that's what a lesbian is.
Yeah. So you're saying that it was when you had not been out for long, and so how was it personally for you to be standing up there?
I was a little nervous because, I mean, I knew I liked girls, but I hadn't really used that word lesbian much.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a funny one for me as well. I always sort of drew, I never sort of pulled it up to question, but I drew it. Differentiated between me liking women and being a lesbian myself in a weird way, you know, because lesbian had such negative connotations, and I could see that other women were beautiful, but
it has to do with our own homophobia that word is so scary, and I think that now it's still not used, and it's still not used very much for the same reason. It's not because we're too cool that we don't use it. It's not because we all want to be queer women or genderqueer. I think it's because we're still afraid of that word lesbian because it's
scary
and it's ugly and it brings all of these nasty things with it.
I agree.
And also the mean people that say it, they hiss.
When
the mean people, when they say lesbian, they make it go lesbian, and it's like, ew. But if you just say...
No, they sound ugly no matter what they're saying.
If you just say lesbian, it's okay. They have a... Like, with the way they say homosexual, it's like, ew. But on the other hand, you get...
Your mouth off my word.
But you can also say the word heterosexual and make it disgusting, but we never do that.
Yeah. No, I think they're just disgusting in general. Yeah, for a period it was sort of important for me to say, and I always did have a little bit of a pause before I'd say, I'm a lesbian, you know? Because it was difficult, I knew I had to say it more.
Yeah, actually there was at one point I volunteered to be a moderator of the Lesbian Avenger meetings, partly because I knew I would have to say the word lesbian over and over again.
Yeah.
Because the very first thing you have to say is, you know, hi, I'm Kelly Cogswell. These are the Lesbian Avengers, a direct action group dedicated to the survival.
Like, you know, an AA group of, or something.
You know, you know, dedicated to lesbian issues and survival, or focus on lesbian issues and survival, whatever the tagline was. But you had to keep saying the word lesbian, lesbian, lesbian over and over again.
Yeah.
And then after a while, you're kind of like, okay, I can say this, and, like, you know, I don't burst into flames, you know, everything is cool.
Yeah. We should have group therapy classes.
So I think it's a word that people, gay, straight, the whole range, still almost refuses to say that word. We had trained the New York media for a little while to use the words gay and lesbian, but they've reverted to say gay women, which is, like, weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's a terrifying word.
Yeah.
But somehow people found it easier when it was tagged to the Avengers, like lesbian Avengers.
Yeah.
It's a gateway word into...
a recruiting technique. Great. So there were 60 lesbian Avengers
chapters
across the world.
And some of them in Australia.
Yeah.
And so you and your listeners should...
The vast cunts in space. This
should help.
Populace.
What I want to do is round up people to help identify people that were involved and document the chapters.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that was really cool about the Lesbian Avengers was that it wasn't just some tiny direct action group that was doing stuff in New York. It was something that came along at a moment where it caught the imagination of lesbians all over the world, until we were all operating with kind of the same tactics and the same goals of lesbian visibility and direct action, until it was actually a lesbian movement. I mean, we mobilized tens of thousands of dykes under the name Lesbian Avengers, and we had actions all over the world. It was a huge and important chunk of all of our histories that should be known, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a movement. It wasn't just kind of a group, which lesbians don't have movements. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah. And a movement that I hope continues. I'll certainly be hounding everyone I know in Australia to try and track down whoever was in the Lesbian Avengers initially, and could we start it up again?
Or even just, I feel like it was kind of a branch that was cut off of evolutionary history.
Yeah.
And that maybe if we can, like, do a
graft the
exactly. Zombie, viniculture, like whatever you want to do, like regraft it back onto the body and see what emerges.
Lesbians are very good at artificial insemination, so we should be able to pull something together.
So I kind of feel like it's an experimentation with history. Like, it got yanked out of our history, and what happens if we put it back into history? I think it could be exciting.
Well, I'm excited by the idea. Can you tell us a bit more about other actions, more about the history of the Lesbian Avengers?
Yeah, so we started with that action about the school, and probably our next biggest action had to do with a firebombing death of a lesbian and gay man out in Oregon. 1992, the Christian right had a big anti-gay push. Well, actually, I mean, they're still continuing it. It's just not getting any play. It's like, the entire LGBT community has kind of been demobilized. All of this stuff is going on, and we celebrate little tiny victories with gay marriage and totally ignore the all-over-the-country anti-gay legislation that's getting passed, whatever. Mm. Okay, but in 1992, they were passing laws not just against stuff like marriage, but against us. I mean, just like saying, just like defining us as perverts and criminals and making it legal to throw us out of jobs, to throw us out of housing, to dump us from hospitals, to keep us out of schools.
That's happened in Australia right at the moment. The anti-discrimination laws don't apply if it opposes your religious beliefs. So there are schools, I have friends who teach in Catholic and other religious schools, and they are closeted, and it's not just because they're not brave enough to come out, but they're at very real risk of losing their jobs. I know one has been told that she must not come out, and the others haven't even, you know, asked if it's okay because they could get fired.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the...
disgusting and horrifying.
And one of these things, I mean, besides the legal problems that people would get into in fear of losing your jobs, is that when these campaigns happen and you have preachers preaching from their pulpits against gay people and politicians on their soapboxes screaming about how we're monsters, violence follows. Violence always follows these hate campaigns.
Right.
And in Oregon, that meant that people that were already marginal, that were kind of skinhead wannabes, felt emboldened to throw a Molotov cocktail at these people's home and to burn them alive. And that was kind of the culmination, actually, of many, many acts of violence in that state, including people being harassed and beaten up, LGBT organizations being vandalized and stuff stolen from them. There was getting very little national play about this murder in particular and in general about the violence that was following these campaigns that were happening in almost every state in the country. And since we're here in New York, which is like the media center of the country, we decided to do several actions calling attention to this. One of the first actions was on October 30th. There's also a big Halloween parade. It's huge, but it also attracts some horrible people that use the occasion for gay bashing. So there was a gay march against violence. And what we did is we set up a shrine to these two people that were killed. We had also decided that we would learn how to eat fire and kind of transform the image of fire being used to kill these people and also the inflammatory language of hate that was being used to incite violence. We had a couple of members that had circus skills, so we learned how to eat fire and did a fire-eating sort of thing where we chanted something like, "Their fire will not consume us, we'll take it and make it our own."
Yeah.
We'll figure out a way to turn this hatred away from us.
And so you've always used a lot of creativity and symbolism and...
Partly because it's effective ways to get the message across instead of just saying this is wrong.
Yeah.
But also because we had a lot of members that were visual artists and theater people and choreographers and dancers. The Avengers kind of came out of not just New York City, but the East Village. In the 80s and 90s, the East Village was actually a center for experimental art, from theater to visual arts to dance to video and film. And a lot of them were dykes, and they got involved in the Lesbian Avengers. Anna Simo, one of the founders, was a playwright. Anne Dedeschi was a journalist and writer. Sarah Schulman, probably the best known of the crew, was a novelist and journalist and gay activist. Maxine Wolfe is a professor. Marie Honan and Anne McGuire were also lesbian activists and kind of involved a little bit in the arts. And everybody but Maxine lived in the neighborhood within like 5 blocks from each other.
Okay. So, I'm interested in how activist groups get together and how they actually practically function.
Yeah, I've been kind of thinking about that, and that's one of the reasons why I started doing this project documenting the Avengers, was thinking not just what did they do, but how did it happen and why did it work?
Yep.
Because at some point, like 4 or 5 years ago, before I started this thing, every now and then, like, some student would say, you know, tell me about the Avengers. But their most important question was always, why did it end? And that's, like, the least interesting question, because the real question is, why do groups start and succeed? So many groups start and fail after, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, really, groups start up all the time and they disappear like without a trace. And this one not only started, but it held together for several years and it spread widely. I think how it started in New York was partly because there were connections. Everybody kind of knew each other, or you knew somebody who knew somebody. And the other thing that's interesting, I should say also, is that it's kind of like a very New York project, because it had two Jewish dykes that were kind of from the Jewish diaspora. Their parents and grandparents were immigrants. You had a Cuban immigrant. You had two Irish immigrants, and you had a French Haitian American.
Yeah.
It's a great thing. It's like what emerges when you kind of mix all this stuff up together.
Yeah.
People came in chunks. You would know somebody, and then you would just bring all your friends.
Yeah.
But it was also really important that they went to the Gay Pride Parade and handed out cards to people that they didn't know and that weren't involved. And so in the very beginning, there were also people that didn't know each other and that hadn't been involved, but were attracted because of the image. Like, those two words, lesbian avenger, are so evocative.
Yeah.
Like, they give you room to be angry, but also funny, but also to feel bold, to feel like, I want to be a superhero.
Yeah, yeah. Really are attractive words. The first podcast that we did was nice. Feminist Avengers.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe the lesbian Avengers was in my psyche somewhere.
But I think to go back to your question, how it kind of functioned, I think you have to have certain kinds of building blocks to create these groups. There was, we've been talking about this also, that there was also a framework of, even if you didn't know people that were involved, you kind of knew that there was activism going on, so it wasn't like a totally foreign thing.
Yep.
I think right now lesbian activism seems very foreign and very distant and very...
It's very almost, establishment, isn't it, for things
well,
like
I don't
the...
I'm not even sure that that's exactly activism.
Yeah.
It's not street activism, for sure. It's kind of activism, but it's not.
But there's very, like, I know in Australia at the moment it's lobbying for gay marriage.
Well, that's lobbying.
A big issue. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's lobbying, which is something different.
But there's also, there are organisations lobbying for the marriage who want to distance themselves from all
there's
sorts
always,
of...
There's always things. A fight between street activists and more establishment people that have, like, organizations with bylaws and funders and presidents and stuff and paid people. I think when I was doing the Avengers, I hated them and I didn't see any use for them, but I think that was actually a little short-sighted. And they hated us and didn't see any use for us, and they haven't revised their opinions, which I think is too bad. After I did the Avengers, I started doing activism that was more like citizen journalism, so that I started thinking about stuff and not always just doing stuff. And you could kind of see the role of street activists are to scream and shout from the left, as far left as they can go, and that what should be the useful role of these establishments are to use this left to be able to remain in the center and to consolidate the gains that the people on the left make.
Yeah.
And to use them as, like, we're the carrot and these people are the sticks. But without those people screaming on the left, without people on the street, what happens is the organizations and institutions go further and further to the right and in many ways become less and less representative of the whole community and just of the increasingly right-wing community. Which I think is too bad, because I do actually think that they serve useful purposes. There have to be some people that understand how politics is played and how you set some of your gains in stone. But what they don't realize also is that it's not enough to change laws. You have to change culture. And the most effective people at changing culture are direct action groups and are people like the Lesbian Avengers that mix activism with some art and trying to attack not just legal positions but cultural positions.
Yeah, and even if they are sort of dismissed as being crackpots, you know, they can...
Big mouth crackpots.
The more establishment can then, they can present their
moderate.
At least,
We give them room to maneuver.
Yeah.
And I think we'd all actually be better off if we understood the roles
that we
should both be playing and not trying to undercut each other so much.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment when the Lesbian Avengers were actually doing a campaign in Idaho against an anti-gay amendment there. The New York Avengers went to help a very small group of Lesbian Avengers in Idaho. And the establishment queers would actually tear down our signs for actions like speak-ups and demonstrations. Like, they would go behind us and tear down our signs. And they also spread rumors like, oh, the lesbian Avengers go to elementary schools and take their clothes off and molest children.
Oh.
This was coming from the people that were supposed to be our allies.
Oh,
and that's like,
man.
Seriously, come on.
Man.
You may not agree with our tactics, but
yeah.
That's just wrong. It's like you're as bad as our enemies are.
Yeah, or worse.
Well, it's certainly more painful.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're on the other end.
Mm. On your website, you've got a great manual that people can look up. You've provided very generously about how people can establish their own activism groups.
Yeah, one of the reasons that there ended up being so many Lesbian Avenger chapters was that we did actively recruit.
Yeah.
And our biggest moment of recruiting was there was going to be a lesbian and gay march on Washington in the spring of 1993. And we saw the program for it and realized there was almost nothing for lesbians. So we decided we would
surprise, surprise, nothing's changed.
Yeah, like a couple of brunches where like you give somebody an award and everybody claps and woohoo, you know,
yeah.
We all love each other. So we thought we would do something. We would have a march. We would have a dyke march. So we started advertising it before we even started planning it. Like,
yeah.
Just started sending out notices. There will be a dyke march.
Yeah.
The Lesbian Avengers are calling, you know. And then a few other groups ended up being involved, including the ACT UP Women's Network. So we used the occasion to do this incredible mobilizing for the dyke march, but also to hand out an enormous broadsheet that had on one side the Lesbian Avenger Manifesto, and on the other side kind of like a brief history and instructions on how to do your own Avenger chapter.
And it's so wonderful. It's got a sort of advice about mediating meetings.
Well, but what I'm saying, that was like the handbook was separate. We started off with this broadsheet kind of encouraging people to do this and giving very, very basic instructions. And the response was so amazing. First, the dyke march had 20,000. We mobilized 20,000 dykes, marched on the White House and ate fire and did all that good stuff. And people went home with their broadsheets. And after that experience saying, we want to be Lesbian Avengers and do this thing. So we thought we better get busy and tell them exactly how to do it. Because one of the reasons the Avengers were so effective in New York is that we had all these great artists and journalists that knew how to do art, that knew how to do media. We had experienced activists that knew how to marshal, that knew how to negotiate with cops, that knew how to run meetings. And we thought, since we can't like jet everywhere, the thing to do is to share your knowledge so that people don't need to have an experienced artist or an experienced journalist or experienced activist.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. It's not brain surgery, but there are ways to do it.
Yeah.
And so we wrote the Lesbian Avenger organizing handbook with all the instructions. And we also, some filmmakers, put together footage that we had been taking of all the actions and put together a video so people had the handbook, and then you could have the video and see what it really looked like.
Yeah, right.
And that enabled people to do activism when they didn't have a big dyke community.
Yeah.
Somebody in a town of 200 people could have a Lesbian Avenger chapter and do things that were cool and that they could feel good about and connected to all these other dykes all over the world doing this cool stuff.
Yeah, and for a while they did across the world. Yeah, and hopefully again.
Yeah, like there was a big group in London that was quite active, and I think they briefly tried to do something in Paris. They tried to do something in Berlin, and Canada had 4 or 5 or 6 chapters.
Yeah. And you're making a documentary.
There's like the main documentary that already exists, kind of the first year of the Avengers. I'm trying to do some interviews with people that were former Avengers, and then I'll do web shorts. And then we'll see if it ends up being an actual big documentary. I'm not so ambitious right now.
Yeah.
Because part of what interests me is, how did you get attracted to the group? What makes an activist?
Yeah.
Thinking, you know, like, can we artificially engineer activists if we know what created activists in the first place?
Well, I think that a lot of it is fear, or it's not about creating an activist, it's sort of like unleashing the, you know?
Unleashing everybody's inner activist.
Yeah.
I think it is partly that, but I think it's also people that came from families or communities where there is a certain civic awareness.
Yeah.
Like, did your mom... Here they have parent-teachers associations that's called PTA for short. If somebody's mom was in the PTA, they had a model of civic engagement.
Okay.
Or if you lived in a neighborhood where kids played on the street and mothers would just kind of generally look out and see what was going on, and they would, you know, like, go out and scream at somebody else's kid if they were behaving badly.
Yeah.
You know, like, that there were models that you don't just let things happen and pretend like it has nothing to do with
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And sometimes the activism was related to religious stuff, people that were involved in church groups. Like, I was involved in a Southern Baptist fundamentalist
yeah.
church. Other people were, like, believing Catholics up until a certain point.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm wary of condemning altogether.
Yeah.
Churches, because I think a lot of evil comes out of churches. On the other hand, I came out of
yeah.
a church.
Well, like they're communities.
Yeah, and also, but also you have a certain sense of what you think is right and what you think is wrong.
Okay.
And you learn how to be outraged at a very early age.
Well, I didn't have PTA or church or anything like that. But for me, I think there was, I don't know, just you float along and accept things the way they are. And then there comes a point when you sort of realise that you don't have to, or you can sort of flow against it. I don't know, I think, and the reason I said beer was because I see a lot of guys doing stuff, activism in Australia anyway, it's male dominated, and you see a lot of guys doing graffiti or kind of doing things which are
they're kind of claiming public space.
Yeah, yeah, putting themselves out there, and they're not, they don't sort of have, what is it, a sense of shame or fear holding them back for whatever reason, just that sense of right that we indoctrinate our young men with, that we don't do so much with women.
I think for the Lesbian Avengers it was, for many of us, even the ones that seemed the most radical, that it was in fact a leap to be able to go into public spaces and
yeah.
shout and scream as lesbians. And what was also scary that we did sometimes that shouldn't seem scary. Okay, so one of the states that passed anti-gay legislation was Colorado. They passed Amendment 2 that essentially said we were monsters and had no civil rights. And so queers in Colorado started up a boycott. They wanted people to boycott the state and not buy products from Colorado. There was like big beer companies, and not go there to ski and vacation and stuff. And at one point, the mayor of Denver came here on a trip to essentially call attention to the tourism for his city. We had kind of short notice that he was coming, so the first idea was, okay, we'll just do a picket outside this place where he's having a power breakfast. And that's... do you have that phrase?
Power breakfast.
No, that's the phrase where, like, really important people just, like, get together over coffee and, like, do business over bagel. Okay, so power breakfast. So the Avengers went outside, like, 6 or 7 or 8 of them, and then they're like, I don't want to just stay outside. This is boring and it's cold. Why don't we go in?
Yep.
So they're like, oh, go in. We can go in. And it, I don't know, like,
It
seems like such, like, a ridiculously simple idea, but...
There are funny, all of these invisible cultural lines that sort of hold us in place.
And yeah, you just don't realize.
Not a physical barrier, but it's a social faux pas to do.
And it was like the Plaza Hotel or something. It was like a big fucking deal. So they... went in, and they went into this room and screamed, like, in a quiet, you know, fancy place.
Yeah.
And screamed, like, we're here, we're queer, we're not going skiing.
But, yep.
And
we're not going skiing. Catchy.
Well, you know, you have to rhyme. That's part of the activist thing. You have to learn how to rhyme. But so that was actually had a huge impact. I mean, because, like, you're in this quiet place.
Yeah.
People are having, like, their quiet little breakfast and talking quietly their business deals and promo and all this.
Yeah.
And you go in there and make a lot of noise. And then later on, as part of the same Boycott Colorado thing, there was this important women's magazine. God, what was it called? I don't remember. But there was an important women's magazine that had arranged to go have like a skiing vacation in Colorado. And we had sent them a letter saying, bad idea, don't do this. It's bad for gay people. We're not happy about it.
Yep.
They didn't answer. So a group of Avengers went to the offices. So you're going into an office that, you know, like it's very quiet. All you hear like are the sounds of keyboards and a few telephone calls. And yep. You go in there and you have to raise your voice and scream. And one woman talked about it. She had actually worked. It was like a magazine that belongs to Condé Nast. And she had actually worked for that chain of magazines. And she talked about how kind of traumatic it was to have to go into this place that she was intimidated by and scream.
Yeah. But I'm sure liberating as well. Because that's,
yeah.
I mean, just
yeah.
that, purely that act. I mean, if it has no political effect or no other effect other than a personal, you know, making yourself
I mean,
heard
because
and
we're,
seen.
Because we're lesbians,
yeah.
but we're also women, yeah. and we've been taught
yeah.
we must not, you know, like,
yeah.
shh,
yeah, yeah,
be
yeah.
quiet.
And yeah, and very effectively, if you just look at who will get up and put themselves forward first in a group
yeah.
situation, who will speak, who will go out and make
so,
themselves
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, so one of the public. Cool things about the Avengers is that we were having an impact politically in our communities, in our cities, in our states, in our countries, but we were also having an impact on each other and kind of what is a lesbian and what can we do, and that we really, really wanted for dykes to feel empowered to be in the street and to raise their voices and to stand up for themselves.
Yeah.
And they could, like, do it in whatever style that they were comfortable with. I mean, you didn't have to pick it. You didn't have to go and scream somewhere or whatever. But you should feel like you own some of the public space.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love your work, and I'll be very interested to follow your documenting of it and going to try and rally the troops in Australia.
That would be great. And Help me.
Yeah, well, so listeners, if you know of anyone who has been involved in Lesbian Avengers in Australia, please get in touch on
lesbianavengers.com.
They're easy to find, and I'll put a link to it when we eventually get it up on the web. And also, if you want to make a new chapter,
knock yourself
yeah,
out.
Let's recruit. Cool. Thanks so much, Kelly.
Thanks.
This has been Cunts in Space, Episode 2, The Lesbian Avengers, with Kelly Cogswell. Thanks for tuning in. You can download our very sporadic episodes at www.cuntsinspace.wordpress.com.
Cunts in Space!
Queer Feminist Podcast.